Thank you. Good afternoon or good morning to those of you on the West, and welcome to the Talking Freight Seminar Series. My name is Jennifer Simone, and I'll be moderating today's seminar. Today's topic is moving size and weight enforcement to the 21st century. Please be advised that today's seminar is being recorded. Today we'll have four presentations given by Steve Kepler of the Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance, Amar Alufa of the University of Central Florida Transportation Research Center, Joe Crabtree of the University of Kentucky Transportation Research Center, and Dan Shamo of the URS Corporation. Steve Kepler has 17 years of experience in the transportation industry, almost all of which has been dedicated to truck and bus safety and security. He has been employed with the Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance since March of 2000 in the position of Director of Policy and Programs. CVSA is a not-for-profit organization established to promote an environment free of commercial vehicle accidents and incidents. Prior to this position, he served as a department director for the vehicle systems at the Intelligent Transportation Society of America, a trade association dedicated to furthering the deployment of technology and transportation. Prior to ITSA, he was employed with USDOT FHWA Office of Motor Carriers, which is now FMCSA, for 6 years in the field and in headquarters. He graduated from Drexel University in 1992 with two Bachelor of Science degrees in Engineering, Civil, and Architectural. Dr. Amar Alufa is a professor and director of construction programs at the University of Central Florida. He is the program director of the Advanced Transportation Communications and Technologies Division of the Center for Advanced Transportation Systems Simulation at UCF. He has been active in commercial vehicle applications research dealing with sensor applications. He is a registered professional engineer. It has a PhD in civil engineering from UC Berkeley. Joe Crabtree is a full-time research engineer for the Kentucky Transportation Center at the University of Kentucky. He manages the center's research program in the area of intelligent transportation systems. Dr. Crabtree has 20 years' experience in transportation research. For the past 16 years, he has focused on intelligent transportation systems. This has included substantial work in commercial vehicle operations, dedicated short-range communications, ITS planning and architecture development, ITS standards, ITS procurement, traffic incident detection, incident management, and homeland security. Dan Shamo has been with the URS Corporation since 2000, where his current emphasis is on intelligent transportation systems and traffic operations. He is currently managing several projects related to virtual way stations and red light running mitigation programs. Prior to URS, he worked for the Indiana Department of Transportation, where he held several different positions ranging from traffic operations, planning and design, to establishing the ITS program for the state of Indiana. This included the Hoosier Helper Motorist Assistance Program, two traffic management centers, a unique advanced traveler information system, and NDOT's virtual way station program. Dan holds a BS in civil engineering from Purdue University. I'm now going to go over a few logistical details prior to starting the seminar. Today's seminar will last 90 minutes, with 60 minutes allocated for the speakers and the final 30 minutes for audience question and answer. If during the presentations you think of a question, you can type it into the smaller text box underneath the chat area on the lower right side of your screen. Please make sure you're typing in the thin text box and not the large white area. Please make sure that you send your question to everyone and indicate which presenter your question is for. Presenters will be unable to answer your questions during their presentations, but I'll start off the question and answer session with the questions typed into the chat box. Once we get through all of the questions that have been typed in, the operator will give you instructions on how to ask a question over the phone. If you think of a question after the seminar, you can send it to the presenters directly, or I encourage you to use the Freight Planning Listserv. The listserv is an email list and a great forum for the distribution of information, as well as a place where you can post questions to find out what other subscribers have learned in the area of freight planning. If you haven't already joined the listserv, the web address at which you can register is shown on your screen. Again, I'd like to remind you this session is being recorded. A file containing the audio and the visual portion of the seminar will be posted to the Talking Freight website within the next week. We encourage you to direct others in your office that may have not been able to attend the seminar to access the recording. The PowerPoint presentations used today are available for download from the file download box in the lower right corner of your screen and will also be available online, and I'll notify all attendees of the availability of the PowerPoints, the recording, and a transcript. So we'll now go ahead and get started. Today's topic, for those of you who just joined us, is moving size and weight enforcement to the 21st century. Our first presentation will be given by Steve Kepler of the Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance. As a reminder, if you have any questions during the presentation, please type them into the chat box and they'll be answered in the last half hour of the seminar. So with that, Steve, you can go ahead when you're ready.
Great. Thank you, Jennifer. And I first would like to thank Federal Highway Administration for putting this webinar together and for inviting CBSA to be a part of it. I think from our perspective, we've been asked to kind of kick this off, and I'm going to provide some context to the speakers following. And again, we appreciate all of you participating and attending today. So the topic, what we're going to talk about today is certainly size and weight enforcement, but more on the cutting edge, some of the technology tools that are being deployed and being looked at to help facilitate more effective size and weight enforcement. And I think there's a couple different speakers we've got here today. They're going to talk about some interesting ideas and concepts, and certainly we're looking forward to advancing the bar in the future for this particular program. Size and weight enforcement has been around for quite some time, and it's evolved over the years, and I think in particular over the last couple of years we've seen a real more focused activity of trying to look at different options for enhancing the whole enforcement program, and couple that with safety programs and look at integrating solutions out on the roadside, and we're going to talk about some of that today. So I think the size of the challenge really is pretty voluminous, pretty comprehensive. We've got commercial vehicle registrations moving higher and higher. This chart's a bit dated, a few years old, but certainly we've got upwards close to 9 million now registered commercial vehicles in the United States. And certainly with the increase in freight volumes, as you'll see in a minute, and the increased number of freight being moved all across North America, not just domestically, we don't anticipate this number going down at all, even with the economic downturn. Some of you may have heard, but just in the last couple of days, there's been an announcement with the vehicle miles traveled, even with the economic downturn the latter half of 2008, there's still an uptick in vehicle miles traveled for trucks, commercial vehicles. So it's continuing to increase, and what we need to look at are different strategies for how we're going to manage this movement more effectively and more safely. This chart, and it's a bit of an eyesore because there's some of the data in there small, but I think a couple of key points that I wanted to point out here. We've got 3 years worth of data presented here for size and weight enforcement activity that's gone on across the United States. And on average, in 07, there's about 217 million commercial vehicle weighings across the United States, as compared to about 3.4 million roadside inspections, vehicle safety inspections. So you can see there's quite a bit of a gap there, a difference at least in terms of the amount of vehicles that are touched for size and weight enforcement activity. Almost two-thirds of those weighings have occurred through weigh-in-motion systems. Again, I think we've seen weigh-in-motion, certainly it's been around for quite some time, but I think it's being used more effectively now in targeting vehicles for further inspection than it ever has been before, and I think we're going to see some of that today. On the violation level, 530,000 size and weight violations occurred in 07. Split the most often cited violation are for axle weight violations, lesser so for gross and bridge formulas. That's a less than 1% violation rate on the total. However, one of the things that I wanted to point out here, if you look at the roadside inspection data, size and weight violations comprise about 9.2% of the violation total of those that are cited at roadside. So a bit of a difference there, but an important one, because I think, again, what we've seen over the last several years is much more integrated approach to size and weight enforcement and safety compliance and enforcement. The other key point of this chart that I wanted to make everyone known is the increase in permits that have been issued over the last couple of years, almost a 33% increase in permits issued between 05 and 07. This chart shows from 2007 driver violation data that were cited during roadside inspections. As I indicated on the last slide, There were about 3.4 million roadside inspections conducted in 2007. Size and weight are the number two oft-cited violations behind local laws, and most of those local laws are traffic enforcement type violations. So you can see there's a fair amount of activity that's in terms of, again, the whole concept of integrating size and weight with safety inspections and enforcement at roadside. The next couple slides, I think we've talked the last few minutes about the whole scope of the enforcement program at a pretty high level. The thing that I think is driving us more towards looking at technology approaches is the huge increase in freight volumes and congestion that's occurring across the United States. And some of you probably have seen this chart before, but in essence, it's showing the freight flows and the volumes of freight flows across the country. And as you can imagine, it's not surprising that the most freight's going in and out of major metropolitan areas. How we manage this continues to be a challenge moving forward in terms of keeping freight moving efficiently and safely, and also using our resources on the enforcement side more effectively to target those that need more focus and more attention. This slide is another way to represent the data on the freight flows. This is a velocity chart. It shows the speeds, the average speeds in those major corridors across the country. Again, it's an important thing to keep in mind that from an efficiency standpoint, obviously we want to make sure the roadways are safe to travel, both for trucks and buses as well as the automobile drivers. We also need to understand that everything we're doing from a safety and enforcement perspective does have an impact on the efficient movement of goods, and we need to be cognizant of that in our activities and having the ability to target the high-risk operators and the ones that are safer, let them to continue to move down the highways. So what does all this mean? From a government perspective, those of you that are on the line that are with government agencies, I think you're acutely aware of the budget situation that's going on in the country, in particular with the states. Government resources to help just deal with this whole increase in volumes and vehicles is not keeping pace with the need, both in terms of labor as well as capacity to move the freight. So what this means is we really need to work smarter at how we do our work out in the field, and there's lots of ways, lots of different strategies we're employing to do that. A big piece of it is using data and analysis. Obviously, you just saw a glimpse of some of the data that's being used out there to help identify and target activities. But again, making efficient use of resources and trying to focus our enforcement activities on those that need it. And technology is a big piece of that. And it can serve on multiple fronts, both in terms of helping manage those freight flows, but more importantly, to help advance the bar in terms of safety and helping act as a force multiplier for enforcement. Eyes and ears can't be everywhere, but we can use technology to help act as eyes and ears and give us more data, more information to, again, target our activities and make them of most value and the best use of the tax dollars. The other things that are important that we can't forget is typically a lot of the barriers to getting some of these things out there are institutional, not on the technology front. So it's important that as we're moving forward and executing on different enforcement strategies and safety strategies, it's a team effort both at the state level in terms of various agencies, but also with working with the industry and helping to again make them understand what it is our goals and objectives are, and making sure that they understand the expectations and what we're expecting of them out there on the highways. So that's my wrap up. I guess we can turn it now to Amar if you want to go ahead and take it from here.
Thank you, Steve.
Amar, you can go ahead when you're ready.
I'm ready. Thank you, Jennifer. Good afternoon, and I'd like to add my voice to Steve's to thank FHWA for putting this together and for inviting us in the presentation. My presentation will talk about the issues related to commercial vehicle tracking and data integration, And as you see, there's the acronym ROCKS underneath, which basically stands for Remotely or Operated Compliant Stations. This is a concept we came up with in that what is normally referred to as virtual way stations, they are not really virtual because they are physical, they do exist. And our concept is these stations can do a lot more than just check weight. We came up with this acronym, and we have built two of these stations, and in my presentation I will refer to these as we go. In designing these stations, we had some primary design objectives. The first one is that they have to be operated completely remotely. In other words, it can be operated from anywhere, primarily because they can be located anywhere in both urban and also in rural settings. Data integration is very important. We have to take all this information, and also they have to have the ability to be self-healing, meaning that to a degree, if something goes wrong, for example, they'll acquire images, they'll keep the images, and operate when the situation is returned back to normal. Talking about remote control, we have designed these systems so that we can shut them down if there is an evacuation scenario, which we found out to be an extremely important objective when we are talking about stations that where there is no operator nearby that can perhaps reset it or troubleshoot it. The very first station we built was 60 miles west of Tallahassee. We selected that location relatively close to another existing way station, primarily as a data validation method for making sure that the information we are receiving at this station is valid and is true, by checking the trucks that drive by about another mile downstream where the way station is. This station remains the only mainline way in motion station in Florida, despite its being in operation about 2.5 years, working 24/7, and it has acquired, or we have acquired, over 1 million records at highway speeds. The next station we built, which is a much bigger undertaking, we built that at the Jacksonville port of Jacksonville, and this station was really designed to do a lot more than the one in Sneeds. It can measure gross weight or acquire gross weight, axle weights and spacing, pictures of vehicles, both low resolution and high resolution, has DOT number readers, container number, shipping container readers. We are in the process of installing an LPR reader, 3D dimensioning using laser to find out height, width, and depth, or radio frequency identification in case it's applied, and then also weather sensors to find out wind speed, potential for fog, and so on. And finally, the ability to do real-time enforcement by sending information wirelessly to an enforcement vehicle. The station itself, I'll switch to Pointer, is basically located at the exit of the port as the trucks are exiting Blount Island, where the port is, and they go around that curve that I'm pointing to. The station itself is located somewhere around where I'm pointing. What does the station consist of? It consists of these sensors that I referred to, and I'll show you some pictures to talk to you a little bit more about what it has. We basically have this masked arm that carries a bunch of sensors, and I'll zoom in closer to show them to you. The station itself, or the enclosures, are these that that you can see here at the left of the image. So this is the masked arm. The sensors we used are Kistler weight sensors. The sensors are, there are two sensors that are located. They are spaced apart about 5 to 6 feet, and they give axle weights, and they also give us truck speeds. This is a slightly earlier picture. We hadn't built the shows you where the station is relative to the weight sensors. This is a close-up of the actual station itself, and let me use my pointer to show you what we have here. This is an enclosure where we keep our electronics. This is the WIM enclosure. And then we have here a battery of cameras. This is a camera pole. We have actually, based on the input we got from the security folks at the port, a pan, tilt, zoom camera that gives them a ground perspective of what's going on around the station. Very useful in case something were to happen or in an evacuation scenario and so on. Over to the left, you have the radar that is used in conjunction with the three-dimensional laser system. We also have hookups for the license plate reader. I'll show you this in a few minutes. To the right, we have here this camera that I'm pointing to is the DOT camera. Above that, it may be a little bit hard to see in this image, but above that, there is the low-resolution camera that takes images of the entire truck. And then above that is the weather station. This is a close-up of the camera array. You can see here the pan, tilt, zoom camera. You can see the DOT camera, and you can see here the low-resolution camera. Over at the mast arm, you can see here this is the container camera that takes a picture of the back of the container and then reads it using OCR. And then to the right of that is the three-dimensional sensor, which gives us the length, width, and height. This is the RFID antenna that is also connected to the mast arm. At the station we built in Blount Island, it has a special feature in that we wanted to tell the trucking public what their weight is for multiple reasons. One of them is as a test, but also more importantly, as you know, sometimes the containers weigh more than what is on the manifest. Truckers end up getting tickets, and then they go back and try to speak with the shippers. So we thought of providing this really more as a service to the truckers. Initially, because the station is only on the right-hand side, we thought we're going to put a sign that says, truckers, please use the right-hand lane. We were surprised, actually, that because of the availability of this service, that the truckers are actually going out of their way, driving on the right-hand lane to get a feel for their weight as they are exiting the port. So, and we made a point to say this is a test program to make sure we are telling the truckers that our objective is also to provide useful information to the truckers, and it's not only just enforcement. But of course, it can also play that role. This is the sign itself in operation, and it shows the truckers their weight as they are driving by. That takes me to this slide here. This slide is an overall framework of basically what are the pieces and how do these pieces work together. I'll explain that briefly. Basically, the trucks drive over a bunch of weight sensors, basically a pair of Kistler sensors and a weight image computer, which I'm pointing to. Once the main computer receives that image, that sentence, they know that the truck is approaching and they know the speed. It immediately informs the DOT computer that captures the DOT image, the container computer that captures the container image, the dimensioning sensor, and the DMS of an impending truck and the respective information that is needed. Once the truck passes by, these systems acquire the images they are supposed to acquire, depending on what images they are supposed to acquire. They do the recognition on them. They send it back to the main computer. The main computer assembles all this information, and this ships it over to our server where the data is actually fused and assembled, as I'll explain in a few minutes. And then, of course, on the right-hand side, you have the array of cameras that is connected to the system. This is just an image showing you what the three-dimensioning system looks like, the type of information it gives you, information related to dimensions. And let's take a look now at really the objective of this, the primary objective. What is the data that we are collecting, and what can we use it for? And why is it important to integrate this data? Why is this important for freight mobility to ensure that we have uninterrupted, efficient flow of freight? I'm listing here, or I will list as we speak, benefits of this data. What can we do with it? For example, it is very useful to know when truckers come to the port, how long do they stay? Once they exit the port, what roads do they take to their ultimate destination? So we actually have a project that we'll start, and it's a unique project in terms of using container numbers to actually track freight movement over the freeways. So this is one benefit. Of course, we have the benefits, the obvious benefits of enforcement, making sure that it's a fair playing field, that everybody is playing with is playing with the same rules. Enforcement, security, it has obvious applications. We know, for example, what time a truck is supposed to arrive, what time it's supposed to be at a certain location. Perhaps if there is a delay, it can be used for planning of freeways, design of freeways depending on expected traffic. It can be used for asphalt mix design, by providing actual loads and actual speeds rather than modeled speeds and equivalent axle weights and so on. I discussed already road design, curve design, and the like. And then finally, in congestion mitigation and closely for roadway use pricing, where you can base the pricing of the road on congestion and times of use. That takes me now to the part that talks about what do we do with this data once it arrives here at the server? So the data warehouse basically brings all this information in the application that you see in front of you on the screen. And an example of how this data would look like. All the pictures that I show in this presentation are captures of the actual system in operation, except for one picture that I'll refer to later. So this is an example of a real report that was produced. We worked at the Port of Jacksonville with Horizon Shipping to see how we can integrate this information with manifest information and with shipping information. So in this case here, we have on the July 22nd, 2008, at 11:28:58 in the morning, we had a truck go by that was carrying container STRU 950072, had a DOT number 502313, was grossing at 34,140 pounds, was doing 36 miles an hour, and then we have additional information that will tell us, for example, what additional information, pictures, and so on. This is the actual capture screen. And in this screen, you can see where I'm pointing at is a live image of Jacksport. And then this is the two images of the three that we take for the truck that was last captured. Below that, you have information related to the gross weight, ID, speed, axle weights, axle spacing. On the right-hand side, you can see the information that was taken from the 3D sensor, the width, height, and length of the truck. Below that is the DOT number that was read by the DOT camera system, OCR, and then sent to the main computer, and from there to the server. And then below that, the container number, TRPU 232, and so on. This is an example of the three images of that very same truck that you saw earlier. These are low-resolution images. On purpose, they are low-resolution because the objective is to be able to send them wirelessly in a short period of time to an enforcement vehicle that will be standing close by, away from the station, to make sure that the traffic is being monitored, or in a location, in a strategic location, where multiple of these stations can actually be monitored by a couple of enforcement vehicles. This is an example of the DOT camera system. The system reads, looks at the truck as it's passing by. After it knows there is a truck that is coming, it reads the information, produces an OCR record, ships it to the main computer, and that same computer, of course, takes it and sends it to the server. This is an example, again, of an actual image taken by the DOT camera. As you can see here, the DOT number, which is actually, from a technical point of view, is a hard thing to do. It can be located anywhere on the side of the truck. All it has to be is legible, as the regulations say, but no specification for font, location, color, contrast, and so on. Next system is the container reading system, and that container reading system, you can see again, we built this, it's basically more or less the same guts of the software running the various applications. You can see here, instead of a DOT, it's actually doing container reading, and in that case it shows the container that was read, and that is in turn shipped to the server. This image just shows you that same image, a close-up that shows you the image that was taken, shows you also in that image, the reason I selected that, some of the complications related to reading containers when you have shadows that perhaps can cover some of the numbers depending on the location of the sun. This is an extension that we would like to do, which is to also add chassis numbers and in addition to license plates. Because we designed the whole system from the ground up, we can add these things easily by just, of course, changing the camera system. The same triggering system can be used in any of these applications. This is a current development. We have not yet completed that. We are working on it, but working on an LPR system using a variety of different lighting conditions, and this is still ongoing work at JAXport. And this is an example of an image that was taken. It's perhaps useful to say that all of these are taken at a speed ranging from about 35 to 45 miles per hour. For the SNEETS station, way station, the speeds are, of course, upwards of 60 to 75 miles an hour. We are also working in our system with the integration with PRISM. As you know, a major piece of information that PRISM needs is the DOT number, and hence our DOT system, reading system. Now, I've been talking about data integration, haven't really shown you how it looks like. Well, this is how it looks like. This is an application that can be installed on any computer. It has the information to go access the server. And once you access the server, you can work in what's called current mode, as I'm pointing, or query mode. In current mode, you say, show me all the trucks that have passed in the last, let's say, 15 minutes. Or in query mode, you can say, show me all the trucks that passed 2 days ago between the hours of 12 and 3 that had a weight exceeding 80,000 pounds. Or show me only the violator's weight or any type of violation that appeared in the last 30 days at that location. And that will bring in the images as thumbnails, as you can see on the right-hand side. On the left-hand side, you can see the actual vehicle, the information related to that vehicle, DOT number, and so on. The next image is really just the same information I have written here, simulated. That's the only image in the entire presentation that was not taken from an actual real operating scenario. The reason is, I'm just showing, you can also incorporate the license plate reading, chassis number, all that stuff which we are still working on. To give you an idea about the sensitivity of the cameras we are using, the operations we do on them, this is a very dark picture. As you can see, there is nothing wrong with your computer. It is indeed a dark picture. With manipulation, this is how it looks like. And indeed, this picture, this image was read, the DOT number was read correctly in this case. This just shows you the types of challenges that you face reading DOT numbers when they have reflective background and so on. What else, what sort of data you can have? Because we are collecting all this information, and because we are archiving it, you can see what how does the average weight vary per month, what are the number of trucks in the different hours of the day. You can see here a slight dip that happens around rush hour at the port of Jacksonville. You can see, for example, the speed of the trucks in different hours of the day, you can see the number of violations and so on. This is the last slide in the presentation, and what I just wanted to show here is the incorporation of a weather station. This is can be very useful in situations where you have perhaps one of these stations in a remote location in a mountain pass where you are concerned maybe about the existence of fog. So if you relate the current temperature to the dew point, you can know whether there is fog and perhaps warn the truckers or reduce the speed and so on. And that brings me to the conclusion of my presentation. It's exactly 20 minutes, and thank you for the opportunity, and I turn it over to Joe Crabtree.
Thank you, Amar. And I know we got a number of questions put in there, and we will get to those at the end of the webinar, but we're now going to move on to Joe Crabtree of the University of Kentucky Transportation Research Center.
All right. Thank you, Jennifer. And again, I will express my appreciation to Federal Highway Administration for setting this up, and to all you fine folks for dialing in. Jennifer did send us an attendee list, and I saw a lot of familiar names on there, so I appreciate the opportunity to do this. My goal today is to talk to you about a concept that there's a lot of work going on. The concept is called Universal ID, and I'm going to give you a little bit of background on the concept of Universal ID and then give you a status report. And if you'll bear with me, for those of you who are not familiar with the term, I will provide a definition of that as we move forward. Talk a little bit about roadside enforcement activities, and again, I'm preaching to the choir, I know, for many of you, but for most enforcement operations, it's physically impossible to stop and check every truck, nor would you really want to do that from an efficiency standpoint, as far as the free flow of commerce. So enforcement personnel have to continually make decisions on which truck should stop and which truck should proceed. And that decision process is what we call screening, with the objective of screening being to focus our enforcement resources on the non-compliant or the high-risk motor carrier or vehicle. Roadside identification is obviously critically important. If we're going to focus our enforcement resources on those high-risk carriers and vehicles, we need to have information to make those decisions. In order to do effective screening, we must have pertinent information about the company and or the vehicle. And getting that information starts with identifying the vehicle and or the motor carrier. So identification is really what drives our process of being able to screen commercial vehicles effectively. A little bit of history. This need to identify vehicles at the roadside is not a new revelation. I mean, we've recognized that need for many years. And we've instituted numerous requirements for identifiers on commercial vehicles. And I've listed some examples here. License plates, DOT numbers. In years past, we had ICC numbers. We require company names, that kind of information. We've had various special plates, placards, decals, those type of things. But they really all have one thing in common. All of those identifiers that we have required on commercial vehicles over the years were designed to be read by a human observer. The problem with that is that trying to screen trucks based on these manual, human-readable identifiers is difficult, it's expensive, and it's largely ineffective. As a result of that, most trucks pass through our enforcement facilities anonymously. Basically, in fact, at most locations in the country, most way stations at least, for the vast majority of trucks that pass through, the only thing that's checked on those trucks is weight. In addition, trucks who want to avoid enforcement contact can generally do that. They can do it by taking alternate routes where they don't come through our enforcement facilities, or by choosing to travel when the enforcement staffing is not present. So the gist of that, the summary of that, is that we really have little success in focusing our enforcement resources on the non-compliant or high-risk carriers and vehicles. That is the case in our current environment. What we've seen in recent years is the emergence of technologies that can provide automated identification of commercial vehicles. And I've listed a couple of examples here. One type of automated identification technology is the what I call transponder-based systems. Think of it as radio frequency identification. These systems are used for electronic screening at way stations. Those of you that are familiar with NORPAS, FreePass, GreenLight, those programs. They're also used for international border crossings, and they're used for electronic toll collection. The other technology that has emerged, and Dr. Alufa talked about this in his presentation, is optical character recognition. Technologies such as license plate readers and USDOT number readers. We have those here in Kentucky as well. We're evaluating license plate readers and USDOT number readers at three of our way stations here in Kentucky. with plans very soon to install a fourth. So what is the current status of the of automated identification? With regard to the transponder-based systems, they are widely deployed. They've proven themselves to be accurate, reliable, and inexpensive. The downside of transponder-based systems is that they rely on voluntary participation, and only a fraction of all trucks in the U.S. participate in these programs. So the non-compliant and high-risk carriers continue to operate anonymously. With the other technologies, the OCR systems, those systems read current identifiers on the truck, so they don't require on the motor carriers, you know, volunteering or enrolling in a program. And many states, including us here in Kentucky, are installing and evaluating optical character recognition systems. So they do offer some value. The major drawback is they just don't work very well. What we're trying to do here is to use technology to read identifiers that weren't designed to be read automatically. They were designed to be read by human beings. And so that we're force-fitting technology to a task, and it can do it up to a point. But basically, they just don't work very well. They also tend to be expensive, which would hinder any kind of widespread deployment. If you wanted to, you know, deploy a lot of these systems to spread your enforcement coverage out, the expense of these OCR systems would hinder that. So the fundamental question, when you kind of look at the situation, you know, where we are and what our goal is, the fundamental question that I have posed here is this one. Is it time to transition from the old manually read identifiers, such as license plates and numbers painted on doors, to a new electronically readable identifier on every truck? And that's where the term universal ID comes in. That's what that's really referring to. When we say universal ID, we're talking about having an electronically readable identifier on every truck. Another way of phrasing that same question, do we need to update our identification requirements for commercial vehicles in order to keep pace with changes in technology? Some of the benefits that we would see with universal ID, benefits for the, I've got a slide for a government and a slide for the motor carrier industry. On the government side, we would see more effective and efficient screening. We'd be able to make better use of our personnel and truly focus our enforcement resources on the high-risk carrier. We provide more consistent enforcement coverage. We'd be able to monitor more routes and not just have our enforcement concentrated on our interstates. It would become harder for non-compliant carriers to avoid enforcement, which would allow us to provide more consistent tax collection where everybody's paying their fair share. We'd be able to improve safety, provide better protection of our highway infrastructure, and improve homeland security. From the standpoint of the industry, we would create a more level playing field. We would make it more difficult for anyone to shortcut the requirements. So again, everybody must play by the same rules. We'd have a better revenue base with everyone paying their fair share of taxes and fees, to where we would have less possibility of revenue shortfalls, which might result in tax increases or fee increases. If everybody's paying their fair share, then we have a better revenue base. We would have streamlined operations at enforcement locations, with safe and legal trucks being able to avoid stops and delays, resulting in, and as a result, we'd have fuel and time savings associated with that. We'd have improved safety, potentially reduce the need for deceleration, acceleration, diverging, and merging at enforcement locations, and less need to stop trucks on the shoulder to perform checks. If we can identify those trucks electronically while the trucks are moving, then we can do those checks while the vehicle's in motion, and less need to stop trucks in order to perform these checks. We should see improved condition of the roadways as a benefit to the industry. Fewer overweight trucks means less pavement damage. We also, as I said before, have a better revenue base, which provides the potential for improved maintenance of our highways. What would this universal ID look like? Well, it could look like a lot of different things. There's really many options. I've listed a few of those here. This is by no means an exhaustive list. It could be something as simple as a uniform machine-readable license plate. Could be a transponder, like is used currently for NORPAS or PREPAS or the electronic toll collection systems. Could be a more advanced transponder, which is, you know, actually integrated with the on-vehicle systems. Could be a transponder built into the license plate, or a transponder built into a windshield decal. And again, there are many others. I've just listed those as examples. And again, just to maybe reiterate a point here, universal ID is not a new idea. Actually, in June of 1999, we here at the Kentucky Transportation Center did a report for what was then the Federal Highway Administration Office of Motor Carriers on, and it was a needs assessment and technology evaluation for roadside, roadside identification, actually, of commercial vehicles. And two of the recommendations in that report dealt with this topic of universal ID. We recommended conducting an assessment of the feasibility of placing an electronic identifier on every truck, and we recommended convening a stakeholder forum, primarily to document specific concerns of the motor carrier community regarding electronic identification technologies. So, again, I put that up there just to say this is not a new concept. It's been around for at least 10 years. That's all pretty much background on universal ID. I want to talk to you about some recent developments. In 2007, FMCSA has an ad hoc team called the Roadside Ad Hoc Team. Its initial name was the Roadside Identification Ad Hoc Team. And under the auspices of that team, a concept paper was developed. And the title is listed there, Concepts/Scenarios for Roadside Identification of Commercial Vehicles. The subtitle was Developing a Vision for the Future Where Every Truck Can Be Identified Electronically. The paper included some background information, the case for having an electronic identifier on every truck, that fundamental question that I talked about a few slides earlier, and some concepts and scenarios for what this electronic identifier might look like. In fact, the first half of this presentation that I gave today is pretty much follows along the information that's in that concept paper. That paper was discussed and refined by the ad hoc team. It was presented in numerous forums in order to gather feedback, with a primary intent, to the extent we could, to try and get feedback from the motor carrier industry. I've listed some examples there of places where we presented this paper. We also made phone calls from here at the center to numerous industry representatives that we had contact with in order to request feedback on a one-on-one basis. Interestingly enough, one of the places this concept paper was presented was in the ITS committee of the Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance. I presented the paper there with the intent of just gathering additional feedback on the paper, but the ITS committee decided they wanted to take action on it, and they looked at that fundamental question of, you know, do we want to move forward on this, and they actually passed a resolution. That resolution went to CVSA's executive committee, where it was passed there as well. And the resolution is to petition FMCSA to require an electronic identifier on every truck. CVSA prepared and circulated a draft petition letter. In March of last year, CVSA's ITS committee reviewed that draft letter, thought it needed to be simplified, and passed a motion to do so. ITS committee formed a subcommittee to work on the letter and to simplify it, and the subcommittee completed its work last month, January of 2009. Letter was considered by the full ITS committee last month, again about 4 weeks ago. The ITS committee sent the letter back to the executive committee for action, and also asked the executive committee to seek input from CVSA's Associate Advisory Committee before taking action. So these discussions will take place at CVSA's Spring Workshop in Louisville in early April. Just real quickly, I'll highlight what is in the current CVSA recommendations. What CVSA is recommending is that 49 CFR 390.21 be amended to require every interstate commercial motor vehicle to be equipped with an electronic device capable of communicating a unique identification number when queried by a roadside system. I've listed some specific bullets there that are included in the CBSA recommendation. They recommend that it be a simple, low-cost decal-type device, with each device assigned to a specific vehicle, each device having a unique ID number, be mounted on the inside of the windshield. FNCSA should specify the appropriate frequency and a non-proprietary communications protocol. Devices cannot be transferred from one vehicle to another. Existing windshield-mounted devices will satisfy a requirement, but only if they meet all the specifications. When FMCSA issues these specifications, if there are devices out there that already meet those, then those devices will meet the requirement. You won't have to add an additional device to the truck. We will associate the unique identification number of each device with a specific truck in the safety and fitness electronic record system. The process for actually issuing the devices and getting them registered in SAFER will be determined by FMCSA based on an assessment of the costs, benefits, etc. List a couple options there. It could be the responsibility of state agencies, or it could be the responsibility of the private sector. Extension of the federal requirement to intrastate carriers would be a state-by-state decision. And as I said there, the intent is for the devices to support multiple roadside operational concepts, but only if that is consistent with the requirements for simplicity and low cost. And the target is to have full compliance by January of 2012. I won't go through all these, but we've listed some issues and research needs. These are listed in the CBSA letter. These are things that FMCSA has been asked to research in coming up with the details of the specification. I won't spend time on those right now. I will mention a couple of frequently asked questions. How do we envision this electronic identifier being used? Just as an example, here in Kentucky, we would envision, if we had an electronic identifier on every truck, we would probably put a reader on every way station ramp in Kentucky and co-locate it with our way in motion system so that we would get the weight and identification of every vehicle as it came through our way station and be able to do fully automated screening on those trucks on the ramp. We would also incorporate these readers into our virtual way station concept. So we would install a way-in-motion system and identification technologies, the roadside readers, at various locations across the state to do virtual way stations. Just to let everybody know, this effort right here for Universal ID is not the ultimate goal. I think the ultimate goal is defined by programs like the Wireless Roadside Initiative and Commercial Vehicle Infrastructure Integration. Those programs define the technology that's going to be in the truck in the future, but most people agree that we're really looking 10 to 15 years out for any kind of universal deployment of those technologies. What we're really looking at here is an interim solution. It does not replace programs like NORPASS and PREPASS. Those transponders are more sophisticated. They have driver signaling capabilities. They are also an order of magnitude more expensive. The tags that we're looking at here with this universal ID requirement will be on the order of $1 to $2 per device. I'm going to skip ahead because my time is pretty much done. But we can address some of these frequently asked questions during the Q&A session if we want to do that. So I don't want to take up any more time, so I will stop there. And I believe Dan is next.
Well, thank you, Joe. Yes, we'll move on to Dan Shammo of URS, who's going to give our final presentation for today.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the opportunity to present here today. This is a fairly broad audience, so I'm going to talk a little bit about some basics about what a way station is here. It's basically a way-in-motion scale. It's a device that's embedded in the pavement and can weigh each vehicle that passes at highway speed. Typically, they're used by planners and other people to schedule roadway life cycles and design pavements and such. To upgrade a way-in-motion scale to a virtual way station, or what I call virtualizing the scale, we need to add communication equipment, a field-grade computer, and usually a digital camera, although it's not absolutely necessary in some applications. This new configuration enables us to identify truck weight violations in real time, and also to post-process the data and get summary information as well. so that the small number of carriers, the small percentage of carriers, I should say, that are breaking the rules can be identified. What we found is that the majority of the carriers are complying with the rules. It's just the small number that are creating the problem. Digital imaging is used to make identifying the carrier downstream or the vehicle downstream much easier for the officers. And there's other uses for the images as well. To make systems more effective, we can add supporting equipment, like a central operating system that manages the data. If a state would have 20 to 50 of these, it could be quite a daunting task to try and handle that manually. One point I'd like to make, I noticed in one of the questions earlier here that was brought up, a virtual weigh station is not used for citations, it's used for screening purposes. Now that's an important distinction. The accuracy of weigh and motion scales is generally not high enough to issue a citation, have it hold up in court. So they are accurate enough, however, to identify suspect vehicles and even go to the extent of which axles on those vehicles are at fault. Here's an example of what one kind, you also saw some Kistler scales in one of the earlier presentations. They're fairly inconspicuous in most cases. Here is an inspection site for roadside enforcement. This pavement was actually built for this purpose on US 24 near Fort Wayne, Indiana. And it was designed to provide a safe working environment for the roadside inspection. However, the majority of roadside inspections are generally accomplished along the shoulders of the pavement. But I just want to show this. This is really a nice way to handle that. If you've never seen a roadside enforcement take place, this is what it looks like. They look like bathroom scales a vehicle is pulled over to the side, and these are placed in front of the tires, and the trucker's asked to move over onto them, and each individual axle is weighed. From that, you can calculate gross weight, axle weight, and then any bridge formula violations, which, if you're not familiar with that, it's a measure of how the loads are distributed on the truck. It has not only does it have to be legal weight, but it has to be distributed properly. Here's an example of the digital image capture. You've seen others earlier today. That pretty much is what a virtual weigh station is and how it's built around the framework of a weigh-in-motion scale. I'd like to talk a little bit about why do we go to the trouble of doing this. And fundamentally, the purpose is to extend our roadway infrastructure. Roadways typically deteriorate for two reasons, either the environmental or from excessive loads. And we can't do too much about the weather, although the engineers have done a great job of providing stronger and stronger pavements and sealants and so forth, but our topic today is to see what we can do about the excessive loading. It is a significant problem, and I'd like to show you that here. This is a simple diagram that shows the relationship in terms of damage, pavement damage, between cars, legal trucks, and overweight trucks. Cars do almost no damage whatsoever. We could build a road that last 1,000 years, the Romans did it, and we probably could too if we didn't have overweight trucks. Way back, I think it was all 2 centuries ago, a man named Vilfredo Pareto developed what was known as the 80-20 rule. If you've never heard of it, he states that for many events, roughly 80% of the effects come from 20% of the causes. In our case, that's probably more like a 90-10 ratio because it's a fairly small percentage of the trucks causing the damage. As you can see from this diagram here, the amount of damage is exponential. It's not a linear function. In fact, it's been calculated to be a fourth power exponential function, which is substantial. And what that means is that a relatively small increase, a few thousand pounds extra on the truck, can translate into a substantial amount of damage to the pavement itself. In some work that we did for the state of Minnesota, we were able to demonstrate that if we could pull off even a small percentage of these overweight trucks, get a return on investment of at least 3-to-1, and realistically that's probably somewhere between 3-to-1 and 10-to-1. Is a very high return on investment for a fairly small initiative. The pavement damage often looks like this. It can also look like wheel rutting and shoving near you know, the stop bars at traffic signal intersections. You've all seen those where the pavement gets shoved forward. A lot of that has to do with excessive axle loading. In the past, there have been, traditionally, it's all been focused on enforcement. Typically, there's three types of enforcement, fixed scales, and oftentimes those are placed at port of entry sites near the state borders. I'm not sure why that was ever done in reality, because that makes the assumption that all overweight trucks come from outside of state, and I take exception to that, I guess. Mobile scales are like portable fixed scales. They're fairly heavy duty. They're trailer mounted, and they're positioned along a ramp, usually, where they pull off vehicles one at a time and run them through the scales, much like they do the fixed scales. Roadside enforcement, you saw a picture of that earlier. That's where we use a portable scale, and it enables that to be done in many, many locations. Most states are using crews for roadside enforcement using the small portable scales. They can put them in the trunk of their car, and only one truck is detained at a time, which is kind of nice. There are some inherent problems with each of these, however. A recent study conducted by Purdue University found that the chances of catching an overweight truck at a fixed scale diminish to near zero within the first 15 minutes after the scale is open. And that's primarily due to the CB network. I think that was brought up in one of the earlier presentations, the discrepancy between roadside enforcement versus fixed scale enforcement. A covert approach can lead to a much higher violation rate. After about 15 minutes, the word gets out up to 50 miles ahead, and the truckers either wait it out or find an alternate route. Mobile scales are cumbersome and not exactly covert. They suffer from the same problem. Within 15-20 minutes, word gets out and they lose their effectiveness as well. Roadside enforcement is more covert and gets around the issue of the CB radio network, but it does require the officer to pull a vehicle over, and it's not exactly the safest environment to be working in. Virtual weigh station strategies attempt to resolve some of these issues. They can dramatically increase the odds of a roadside inspection yielding a citation, because you're more likely to pull over a vehicle that, you know, it's a screening tool, and you're more likely to pull over a vehicle that is suspect. Another way of looking at that, and having spoken with a number of the inspectors, is that they do not like pulling over a truck and weighing it and finding out it was legal. It's kind of embarrassing, and it does create some friction. And so if they pull a truck over with a high confidence that it's going to be pulled over, that it's going to be overweight, then that really helps. They also, virtual weigh stations, and I think this is probably one of the biggest advantages, that it enables the enforcement officers to target the times and locations when they should be out there. There's no need for them to be out there during, you know, if there's no trucks out there or I'm overweight, and oftentimes that is the case. It can be useful for getting around the evasion of fixed scales. They can be used at specific roadways. A lot of times a roadway will be built and all the bridges will be built around the same time, and you get bridges built back in, the 1940s that may be substandard. You may have a roadway that has 5 or 10 of these. One virtual weigh station can protect the whole batch of them by putting it anywhere on that roadway network to identify what those loads are and what it's doing to the life cycle of that particular structure. They also provide a rich source of data for performance measures beyond just weight compliance. For example, freight movement tracking can be identified, which is very helpful for commodity studies. And capacities to allow loads with permits. There's been all states get under a lot of pressure to increase their permits capabilities, and this provides a defense in that case. Predicted versus actual payment life cycle. This is useful. Some states offer payment warranties. And this is a virtual weigh station is one way of, actually a weigh in motion scale is a way of telling how fast that pavement is being consumed. I'd like to make a point here. There is a difference between weight enforcement and weight compliance. It has to do with, weight compliance is actually a broader term. It uses enforcement. But enforcement is not the only thing. We've typically been using enforcement for years. Weight compliance has to do more with improving behavior on an overall perspective. And there are other strategies other than just enforcement. So, I like to think of the programs in terms of weight compliance versus weight enforcement. In this slide, we talk about how enforcement has not delivered the goods in many respects. The fixations are very expensive, and they're easily circumvented. Port of entry scales, for example, do not address intra-state movements where there are a lot of overweight movements. Particularly certain commodities tend to run heavy. The blind enforcement, what I would call blind enforcement, is just picking a truck and weighing it, doesn't have a very high hit rate. Compliance programs, on the other hand, are more effective because the real goal is compliance, not fines. You could add all the fines we get from enforcement, and it doesn't even begin to touch the damage that's done to the pavement. So it's better if we can encourage better behavior. What we're seeing in the virtual weigh station arena is that habitual offenders are the real target. I mentioned before there's a small percentage, probably less than 10%, are running overweight. And of those 10%, a very high number of those are the same trucks over and over again. So by dealing with those on an individual basis, you have a high, I call that the low-hanging fruit in weight compliance program. It's also nice not to have to disturb the overweight, the legal trucks. Here's what virtual weigh stations bring to the table. It's more covert. I believe it's much lower cost than building the large facilities. And I should make a point here. The permanent weigh stations have other purposes, and I'm not advocating they be eliminated. I'm just saying that they are only one tool in a whole toolkit. Virtual weigh stations are ubiquitous, so they can be placed all around, particularly if you've got areas of your state that have high, heavy commodities, certain ag products, coal, steel, concrete, so forth, tend to run heavy. And it's easier to find those habitual offenders using this approach. Got a third bullet there called zero enforcement opportunities. This has to do a lot with the weight compliance program. What I mean by zero enforcement opportunities, instead of weighing trucks and punishing them with a citation, if you know who those habitual offenders are in particular, it is possible to contact them by letter or by phone or whatever and try to encourage behavior. I'm going to use the word encourage with quotes on it. That can be done by asking them. It can be done by approaching the industry groups and asking them to self-enforce their own group, their own players. It can also be done by visiting them on site and running various kinds of inspections and audits. It can also be done by focusing attention on those particular vehicles on a particular carrier when they're known to be happening, say coming out of a borrow pit or something like that. And then we talked a little bit about performance measures earlier. Performance measures is becoming a more and more important topic every day. And there's a lot of very good data that's generated by the virtual weigh stations, not only for this purpose, but for example, you can improve the health of the scale by keep using the data from a virtual weigh station to tell you the level of accuracy of your WIM. Beyond that, I like to think of taking a weigh in motion scale and turning it into a Swiss Army knife. There are a lot of other things that you can do with it. These three here are fairly straightforward. The road weather systems are you know, they've been around for years, so there's no risk whatsoever. Those can be done. That was also mentioned earlier. Infrared temperature sensors are becoming of age. It's possible to measure tire temperature and wheel hub temperature and look for bad brakes and bad tires. And this is useful for the trucker themselves, who may not even know they've got a problem. Radiation detection has been proposed, and there is some work going on in that area. I'm not personally familiar with a lot of it, but I do know it is going on. There's a lot of reasons why that could be useful. One of them I thought was kind of interesting was that there's some research going on at Argonne National Laboratories where they're trying to identify different cargoes based upon the radiation signatures that come out of it. Everything gives off some sort of radiation, I understand, and by recognizing that, you can actually tell a little bit about what the commodity is. there's a very good chance that their illegal disposal of radioactive materials is going on, and this might be a way of picking that off as well. Beyond those three, which I think are fairly high probabilities of those three enhancements going on, there's even some further ones that could take place. We might be able to look at exhaust emissions, for example, measure air quality at specific points, particularly around urban areas that are non-attainment areas. I have seen enforcement officers stand next to a truck and identify a brake leak just by listening to it. They know there's a certain hissing sound that's given off. I believe it's possible that a highly sensitive microphone might be able to identify, and a computer might be able to identify leaking air brakes. So there may be some other things that we can do as well. The sky's the limit as far as I'm concerned. The more things we can build around the wind cabinet there, the more valuable they become. To date, there have been a number of accomplishments. I think there's been quite a bit of progress made. We've virtualized quite a few scales in a number of states that are active today. We've developed guidelines for inspection sites. There are a lot of characteristics that should be considered when you're building a WIM. You should also consider where do you want to inspect, and is it safe and convenient to get to, and are there other amenities that need to be attached to that. Creating weight compliance strategic plans is helpful because, as I mentioned before, punishment by citation is not the only way to get trucks to stop running overweight. There are other tools. The data can be used to estimate the amount of damage, and this can be very useful for planning purposes and for guaranteeing that problem isn't increasing over time. Enforcement data, it can be used to calibrate the WIMs. This has always been a problem. A weigh in motion scale needs to be calibrated periodically, and with enforcement officers actually weighing specific trucks, that information can be fed back to the WIM either on a manual or an automatic basis and calibrate the WIMs and keep them fine-tuned. Night day imaging systems, that was addressed a little bit earlier. There are some issues with getting information at night, but you always get the weights. The WIM doesn't care whether it's light or dark, but the getting the image off the side or the front of the truck can be an issue in certain weather conditions. Internet access for roadside enforcement is typically necessary, or unless there's a wireless system in place. And dimensional enforcement is becoming a significant issue, and this could be very valuable for structures that have low heights and restrictions as you're approaching work zones, for example, where they're narrow lanes. Where do we go from here? I'm proposing two general categories of things. A multi-state consortium it would be a great idea, in my opinion. It would help to standardize central operating systems so states could share data and basically share each other's border facilities. If you had a weigh-in-motion scale near your border heading outbound, the inbound state might be interested in monitoring that just as if it were its own. That can be done with simple agreements, letter agreements actually, a memorandum of understanding. Performance measures, there's all sorts of performance measures. I don't want to get into that today, but there's a lot of things you can utilize this data for. There's still a need for a number of areas of research. The damage estimation is a little tricky, and it can be refined, particularly where we're talking about bridge environments. Additional enhancements, as I mentioned, we're only limited by our imagination, and I think there's a lot that we can do, as well as performance measures. I guess this one says it all. We've come a long way, and I believe that's, although we're still weighing trucks with scales. If you have any information, I'd be more than happy to speak to anyone at a later date. I think we're getting close to our Q&A time here, so I'll hand over the floor.
Okay, well, thank you, Dan. We're going to start off the question and answer session. We're going to try to get you out on time at 2:30, so hopefully we'll be able to get through these questions quickly because I know there's a number of questions there. I'll just go in order. So starting with a question for Steve, the large truck crash causation study completed by FMCSA in 2007 suggested that 87% of large truck crashes were attributed to driver factors, 10% to vehicle factors, and 3% to environmental factors. How do these causation factors match up to our national enforcement efforts? I.e., what percentage of enforcement efforts are dedicated to roadside vehicle performance versus CRs, training, driver inspections, etc.?
Wow, good question. Well, there's about 3.4 million roadside inspections done a year. They're fairly evenly split between level ones, twos, and threes, almost one-third down the middle. That compliance reviews is probably in the neighborhood of 12,000 a year countrywide. Thirds of those are done by federal people. The rest are done by the other third by the states, approximately. As far as training goes, there's about $2.5 million in MXAP money that's allocated every year for the total MXAP budget, which is about $300 million that goes to the states that's allocated for training. And obviously, the states use their own money for training, and they have their own training programs. Relates to the crash causation study, I think what we've seen over the last couple of years, and part of this was precipitated by 9/11, but part of it was also precipitated by the work that study did, as well as some other studies looking at driver behavior and performance, as well as changes to the hours of service rules. About 5 years ago, that inspection demographic, about half of it was level one inspections. And now we've seen more of a shift to level twos, and particularly level threes, which are driver credential inspections. And we've seen a lot more focus on traffic enforcement activity over the last couple of years as well. I think if you look at the data, there's close to, of those 3.4 million inspections, there's about 800,000 traffic enforcement contacts associated with those. So there's been a pretty sizable movement to trying to focus more on drivers, in part because of what the data is showing, but also not losing sight of the fact that vehicle safety is still very important. The other thing I'll note is there is some of you on the phone, probably many of you have heard of this comprehensive safety analysis for 2010 program that FMCSA is working on, trying to re-engineer basically the whole safety, fitness, and compliance assessment program and decoupling the safety rating process from the compliance review process and integrating roadside data and roadside inspections into the safety rating process on a monthly basis rather than whenever a carrier gets a compliance review. So that's a movement that's happening right now. The other thing that I'll note is for the states that are on the line, many of you probably are aware of something called the Driver Information Resource. That's a tool that FMCSA recently has made available to states in enforcement that basically is a targeting tool for driver data. It integrates various pieces of driver data and allows enforcement to focus more on drivers. So I think there's a lot of things moving, trying to understand, the different data, what it's telling us, and how we're shifting our programs to account for where the crashes are occurring.
Okay, thank you. Amber, are you back on the phone?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, great. We have some questions for you next. The next one is, weigh-in motion doesn't always work well in urban environments due to low speeds leading to misclassification. How is this compensated for your weigh-in motion sensors?
Okay, that's a good question. We have actually built two systems so far. One of them you would classify as a high-speed system, the other probably more of a moderate speed. If you're talking about speeds of 1 mile per hour or 5 miles per hour, that is a problem, and it's there isn't really a very good way to get around it. We did make sure that picking the location for the station at the port is that the speed is also both uniform and above about 10-15 miles an hour, where you can get an accurate an accurate read.
Okay, great. We have another question. I believe this one is for you. What do you do with the imaging during bad weather conditions and at night?
I had actually just responded privately. We are not imaging at night in our cases, but there are systems that can use infrared lighting, which works in some applications. Site lighting, if it is appropriate, can be used. If you're talking about bad weather, snow, heavy rains, all of these, and I think also Dr. Chatry alluded to that, these are problems for any imaging scenario, and there is really little you can do about that.
Thank you. And I think this next one's for you as well. Are enforcement officers using the data as screening data and then reweighing the trucks?
Both of the systems that we developed are not used right now in real time enforcement, if you will. The one up at Sneeds was done more for validation, and the one in Jacksport is more for data integration. So the answer is the system is able to do it. We have designed it that way, but we haven't tried it in that scenario yet.
We have another one for you. Will you be able to capture the hazmat placard? Is there a way to determine what the truck is hauling?
That is a good point. We do have ways that we can do it. We have not worked on it, but there are ways that can use image extraction and so on, and use the color to determine what's in the truck. But I don't have personal experience in that, and we haven't tried that.
And what capture success rates do you see with LPR and USDOT readers at a speed of 60 to 65 miles per hour?
Okay, I won't be able to respond to the LPR part because we're still developing that. I can answer DOT. In our application, we have used that at the port, so the speeds are limited to about 50 miles per hour. And the average capture accuracy in our case for our system was about 65%.
Thank you. This next one, I'm not sure if this is actually for Amara or for Joe. Do you compare license plate numbers and USDOT numbers with actual state or national records?
I think that's probably for Amara, since I didn't really talk about our LPR and DOT readers.
We are setting now the infrastructure to connect to PRISM, but we haven't done that. That is a step that we do plan to do, but we haven't done that yet.
Okay, thank you. Well, now we'll move on to one for Joe. If the devices are mounted on windshields, how would a window replacement be handled?
Yeah, it's a great question, and that issue has surfaced before. And basically, when this tag is the type of technology that we're recommending, if FMCSA pursued that approach, would become, in essence, a permanent part of the windshield when you install it, and if you remove it, it disables the tag. So replacing a windshield would entail replacing the tag. Of course, the tag, it's one of the reasons for choosing such an inexpensive technology, that you'd be adding $1 to $2 to the cost of a replacement windshield.
Okay. And then we have two similar questions. What is your sense of the trucking industry's attitude towards universal ID systems? And also, do you have a sense of how other jurisdictions will react to your suggestions of universal transponders?
Yeah, those are both great questions. With regard to the industry, one of the things I learned years ago is that you can't speak of the trucking industry as if they're just one voice or one person. It's a very diverse industry, and it's made up of individuals. And, of course, individuals have their own ideas about things and the way things ought to be done. I will say that I've actually documented a lot of the comments that have come in from our conversations with industry folks. The positive comments basically from the industry focus primarily on the level playing field. The folks that are out there doing things right, obeying the law, paying their taxes, keeping their trucks safe, they want everybody to have to, that they don't want unfair competition from other fly-by-night carriers out there who are cutting corners. So they really like that aspect of it. They like the safety aspect of it, the stronger revenue base with everybody paying their fair share. They like the efficiency aspect of it. They do have some concerns. They're concerned that technology like this could be used for example, nitpicky speeding or logbook violations. Could be an enabling technology for weight distance taxes at the state or the federal level. If the reader technology was only installed at weigh stations, it would simply focus more attention on the big interstate carriers. So that's one of their concerns. So those are examples. But again, the primary feedback I've gotten from the industry has been positive, but it's a cautious positive. It's yes, we think this could do a lot of good, but there are issues we need to make sure that we're sensitive to as we move forward. And from the standpoint of the jurisdictional response has been extremely positive, because there are a lot of jurisdictions out there right now trying to deploy technology to identify trucks, and most of us are using license plate reader and USDOT reader technology, and it's expensive. And again, while it's useful, it is certainly limited. It's expensive, and for this application, it simply does not work very well. So they're very excited about being able to deploy their ramp screening systems and their virtual weigh stations at a much lower cost and a much higher level of performance.
Thank you. We have one more question typed in. I think this might be for Dan, but do you have to stop a truck to identify if it is a habitual offender, or if is there the idea of pictures?
Can you repeat that, please?
Do you have to stop a truck to identify if it is a habitual offender, or is there the idea of pictures?
What we're proposing is that using the USDOT number, which you can capture off the image, you'd be able to identify that. From a given site, what we've observed is that the same vehicles keep showing up over and over again, and that from images, yes. And particularly if you can read the DOT number on the side. Oftentimes, just the logo from the, you know, with the name that's on the side of the truck from the carrier is all you need, too. Depending on the, you know, whether it's a local route or heavy interstate where you got a lot of trucks coming from, you know, cross country.
Okay, thank you. I don't see anything else typed in at the moment. We have a few more minutes, so we'll just go ahead and see if there is anybody that has a question over the phone, but if not, we'll close out. So if the operator could give instructions on how to ask questions over the phone.
Yes, if you would like to ask a question, please press *1 on your touch-tone phone. Please record your name when prompted so I may introduce your question. Again, that is *1, and please record your name.
People are trying to do this, advanced questions. This is Tom Carney from the Office of Freight Management and Operations, Federal Highway Administration, and I personally want to thank Steve, Amr, Joe, Dan for an outstanding job today. I appreciate the work you're doing in the area of advancing technologies for truck enforcement. I'm sure our friends in the trucking community appreciate it. As every minute spent in a long queue at a weigh station undergoing a traditional inspection is wasted fuel. It's air quality contamination that can be avoided, and it's officer time that's really not well attributed. What you guys are doing and the hard work that you're advancing, each of the three of you, and Steve, of course, with your supportive enforcement activities across the nation, absolutely invaluable to the Federal Highway Administration, and I want to express my appreciation and support for what you're doing today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We do have a question from Tom. Your line is open.
This is Tom Melville from the NESP Police. Just wanted to respond to the suspended or habitual driver. I think it's going to depend on how the state legislature is, but in Indiana we have to physically be able to see the person and be able to identify them in court. So the photograph's not going to do us any good. We couldn't do anything by mail. We have to physically see the violation.
Thank you, Major. That's an excellent point. The answer I was trying to give on that was that to identify who those habitual offenders might be in the first place, you'd use this equipment. Again, it's a screening tool. The actual citations would be issued, of course, from real-world inspection, either roadside or otherwise. Excellent point.
And I have no more waiting questions.
Okay, well, thank you. We'll go ahead and close out today. Thank you to all four presenters, and thank you to Tom Carney of the Federal Highway Administration for pulling this webinar together today. Before we close, I just want to mention the Freight Peer-to-Peer program. I do have a slide showing on the screen. If you haven't done so already, I encourage you to visit the Peer-to-Peer website and learn more about the program. But it's really just a way to share freight knowledge between public sector freight transportation professionals. It provides free short-term technical assistance regarding freight planning and operations. So for more information, you can go to the website, you can call the phone number, or send an email. The next seminar is going to be held on March 18th and will be about freight corridor programs. And this seminar, as well as the April and May seminars, are all now open for registration. And you can get to the registration page from the Talking Freight website, which I have on the slide on your screen now where it says register for future seminars. I also encourage you to join the Freight Planning Listserv if you haven't done so already. So with that, thank you everybody in attendance. Thank you to our presenters, and we'll close out for today. Have a great rest of the day.